I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This month, Streaming Things is brought to you by our super Patreon supporters, Chester Copperpot, Jade, Jillian Morgan, Aaron Layton, Andrew Gray, Casey McCain, Crystal Trujillo, Jen Robinson, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate, Kiki Newton, and Will Nash.
Bow, you shits!
The real war isn't between a few squabbling houses. It's between the living and the dead.
Winter is coming.
Why are all the gods such vicious cunts?
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
I am the shield that guards the realms of men.
You know nothing, Jon Snow.
I drink, and I know things.
You're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms!
Death is the enemy. The first enemy, and the last.
I am the god of jits and wine.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the first of its name.
Long may it rain.
Long may it rain. Hello.
Lord Protector of the RSS feeds.
Hello.
If you're wondering what we do here, we like to get down on that hot D action.
We do indeed.
Like to go this down on the hot D?
It's quite an episode for that moniker. Mm-hmm. This is where the hot D fully came out.
I almost feel like this needs to be an after hours episode of the pod with how steamy this one was.
I do want to say this in all seriousness. I'm feeling pretty goofy. I had the wrong pizza delivered. I'm a little slap happy, tired.
Accidentally got a better pizza.
I've got like tired energy right now. Big tired energy. But look, this is a really good episode where this would be a really good episode for not three dudes to be talking about.
For sure.
I just want to say that up front. This would be a great time to have the perspective. And that is always the case. But I say now more than usual, it is tantamount that we should have a female perspective. We do not have that. So we will do our best. But also, you know, we're just take everything we say with a grain of salt. We're goobers, but we mean well. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to call attention to that. I mean, we're well aware of that, but, you know, we're covering the show. So we'll do our best. So if you don't, if you can't tell, we'll be covering House of the Dragon Episode 4, King of the Narrow Sea in this episode. And if you're new to the show, welcome. We're a hoot and holler, as we say here in Kentucky. And
a hoot and holler near the holler.
Indeed.
Yep.
And our Belgian listeners might not know what a holler is. Just Google it.
Yeah, you'll find it.
Holler, Kentucky.
Holler if you find it.
So the structure of this episode is such that we'll talk about our overall thoughts about the episode. And then one at a time, you know, just what our experience was, what our overall thoughts are. And then we'll go to a scene by scene breakdown of the episode. After that, we'll go to a segment that we call Dragon Eggs, and then we'll talk about different lore tidbits, maybe allusions to Game of Thrones or the books in general in that section that we found, if any. And then we'll talk about our Valyrian Steals, our top three favorite moments of the episode. Go around the room. And then finally,
steals the show.
Indeed. We'll close it out with the Mummer's Dragon segment, where we talk about our favorite performance of the episode. A fun pun about the mummers.
So much fun.
And actually, in this episode, there was some mummers.
There were several mummers.
So that is fun.
So many. We also have a brand new segment that we just debuted last week called A Song of Errors and Corrections.
You have a few, Steve.
I do have a few. This segment, guys, is if in the previous episode, so last week, if we said some things that maybe we weren't sure of or maybe we got wrong. So
outright wrong.
We use this time to come out and clear the air, as it were, and say what exactly
I have been wrong before.
And I'm here to say we weren't wrong about anything. Aha! I just did some following up on some questions we had about last episode. So Tywin Lannister has been confirmed. He is on the Small Council. He is the Master of Ships in Lord Corlys Velaryon's absence.
Oh, that's right. He was so angry he left the council. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
The old guy that we were wondering who he was like, yeah, second of his name. Yeah, that dude. That is Hobert Hightower. That is Otto's brother.
The actual lord.
He is the actual lord of Old Town.
Indeed.
And then this really isn't anything. This isn't a correction. I just thought it was kind of interesting when I was doing research. The guy who plays Tywin's brother, the other Lannister.
Jason
Lannister. He is played by an actor named Jefferson Hall. He has appeared in Game of Thrones before. He played Sir Hugh in the first episode season one of Game of Thrones. He was the guy who's like, I'm in the tourney. And then he gets like the splinter in his neck and he like dies immediately.
Oh, shit.
That is the same actor.
Game of Thrones show round two.
Yeah, round two.
I love that his name's Jason, too. It's like Harwin and Rhaenyra, Aegon, Tywin, Aemon, Paul,
Ed.
Well, there is a Ned, which I always thought was goofy.
That's goofy. It's
like they added an N for the shortened version. It should be Ed.
It'll make no sense.
Ed, Neddy.
But the
two brothers are different actors. The twins, the Lannisters.
Yeah, they're two different actors.
They look so much alike.
And twins.
They cast really well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well cast, those Lannister boys. Let's dive right in. So let's talk about our overall thoughts on episode 4. Steve, what you thinking, my guy? How was that? Because we just finished watching it. We haven't spoken.
So this was, like we said, a very steamy Game of Thrones, very sexual Game of Thrones, and not all of it super comfortable. You know what I mean? It's definitely one of those.
I would say almost none of it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those. 100%. It's definitely one of those Game of Thrones episodes that's really trying to they're looking at this letter and they're trying to push it. They're trying to push that envelope across the table as far as they can. They're like, can we go further? Let's go a little further. Let's push it a little bit. Let's push it.
You said letter and it threw me off.
Yeah, I meant envelope. I'm sorry.
I thought scarlet letter. I was
like, what do you put in envelopes a letter. So they're also pushing on a letter at the same time because there's a letter in the envelope.
You overthought it. They're licking the stamp. They're addressing it correctly.
At some point, they're using their tongue to lick the stamp and then they push the envelope because that tongue is being used in some of those scenes.
That's true.
But it's also, it was weird. We were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but it is an episode where I feel like the least amount has happened. But at the same time, the most has happened in terms of like, this is the episode where everything is like really flipping on its head. Like we're really getting the dynamics and relationships and character motivations and where characters are in the world has been upended. It is completely different now. Mm-hmm. But this episode did less with the scripting and dialogue that everyone knows and loves so much about Game of Thrones and House of Dragon now. And it really did a lot more visual storytelling. And it really just kind of sat in scenes and allowed the characters to kind of exist in the world and kind of be in the gross, dank, sticky, if we're honest, rooms of King's Landing and bed chambers abound. And there were dead rats, naked people, dick sucking, and open sores on bodies. It was everything you could possibly have. Andy, what did you think?
I liked it a lot. As you said, it was pretty steamy, but that's half of the allure of Game of Thrones. Often, for a lot of people, myself included, I want action and I want steam, and this was one of the steam episodes. Although it did have some pretty wicked, awesome action at the very start of the episode, that was dope. Obviously, as you guys have already alluded to, it was pretty uncomfortable at times, and I think intentionally so. The music definitely didn't do us any favors for our comfort throughout those sequences, but it was gorgeously shot. And even though, like, I don't think that the the plot was necessarily pushed all that much. As far as like character development, I think it changed a lot of things in a pretty short amount of time. And so, I thought it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think this this was a phenomenal episode, a home run, in my opinion. And I think a lot of the stuff, and again, that's why I prefaced it at the beginning, and I hope you guys recall that as we talk for the next hour. A lot of the stuff, whether or not it worked or didn't work or was respectful or disrespectful, is not for me to say, ultimately. However, I think it was handled very honestly, very tastefully. We got some huge confirmations of things that in the book Fire and Blood were just rumors. And now we get to see, because George Martin's a huge part of the show. So this is to be considered as the objective truth of what had really went down. And we don't have to worry about what Septon Eustace said or what Mushroom said or any of that. Like, this is what happened, right? So we got some huge confirmations in this episode. And we also got a reaffirmation that they plan on keeping the fabled prophecy that was at the heart of Game of Thrones.
Are you referring to a certain song?
Yeah.
Of Ice and Fire?
Of Cubes and Flame.
Yes. A certain prince that was hinted towards?
That may or may not have been promised, which was considered by many diehard fans of the books a huge ball that was dropped at the end of Game of Thrones. And so it seems like they could be on some course correction here, right? Because remember, we do know they plan on doing at least one sequel show, which will be Jon Snow's story. The show's lovingly called Snow at this point.
Are they for sure going with that?
As far as we know, at this point, it's greenlit. As far as we know. So anyway, like stuff like that, I was just in rapt attention. And I think that knowing what I do know for sure goes on in the plot moving forward, mixed with what they're doing, where we're at in the show, I'm ecstatic. I'm giddy. Oh, my giddy aunt.
Oh, he's giddy.
As Chaucer says in A Knight's Tale. We have never mentioned on the show, by the way, and this is off topic, but it's worth mentioning, Miguel Sapochnik, fabled co-showrunner along with Ryan Condal, the person with whom a lot of the trust was given on this show to begin with, is the reason it was greenlit, has left as showrunner. He will not be back for season two. Mm-hmm. I think Aaron Taylor is the name of the replacement. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And his pedigree is strong in television. I think he did a lot of the greatest episodes of The Sopranos, a lot of the really good episodes of Game of Thrones. His movie pedigree, not so much. But it's just going to be Ryan Condal as the only showrunner. And then the Aaron Taylor, if that is his name, is going to be attached. So anyway, no Miguel Sapochnik. He's just said he doesn't want to be in the Game of Thrones universe anymore, which is fair. That's been there for many, many years.
Been around for a while.
I'll do it. I'm just throwing that out there. I know a lot of HBO execs.
I will take it.
I will take the ring to HBO. Fired for mixing metaphors.
Yep.
Immediately. Anyway, wanted to mention that. So let's dive right in. I'm really excited to talk about this. I'm terrified to talk about this, but I'm excited to talk about this. The show opens right away. It opens with a close-up on Rhaenyra fiddling with a necklace, which I thought was, like, there's so, like you said, a visual storytelling at its peak in this episode. And it opens with Rhaenyra playing with the necklace that Daemon gifted her, the one that's made of Valyrian steel. So there's just all these little clues that she's thinking about Daemon all throughout this, right? And she's in the, we believe, Storm's End, because it looked like a Baratheon stag sigil on the guy to her right.
Yeah, she's definitely next to the Baratheon that, funny enough, was...
Lord Bormund?
I can't remember what his first name was, but like he was the Baratheon that didn't seem too jazzed about swearing fealty to
that
her.
Is Bormund then.
But I, we don't know for sure if they were there, but I assume it's at Storm's End.
Yeah, because he was kind of on the there. Dais, you know?
Yeah. Because it's kind of I was a little bit let down about that aspect, because Storm's End is like the one castle that's like famous in Game of Thrones that we really haven't seen.
And they didn't an establishing.
Didn't get to see
it. We didn't have an establishing shot. We were just in the chambers, if indeed that's where we were.
Yeah, if indeed.
Yeah. If that's even your real name,
yeah.
Storm's End. But I mean, other than that, like they're there. There has been a great effort into, this is basically a giant courtship ceremony where all these lords are showing up here and they're kind of telling Rhaenyra, like, hey, I'm a pretty dope guy. I've got a big castle and it's beautiful. And, you know, when I was 20, it looked even better.
Yeah, he's like 75 now.
Yeah.
He's old enough to remember Queen Alysanne in her youth.
And this is Dondarrion. Was the old guy
Lord Dondarrion? Yeah, He's the Lord of Blackhaven, I believe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's on a tour of suitors. So essentially her task, Rhaenyra's task, Viserys sent her to visit all of the great lords and houses and sit and let everybody propose to her, essentially, so she could choose one. And she's presumably been to a few places before this. She's exhausted of it. She's talking shit the whole time. A little bit out of character for her because she's downright cruel a little bit in this scene, which to me is a little out of character for her, but just, she's just pissed to have to be there. She mocks the old man, old Lord Dondarrion, in a way that makes the entire court laugh at him. And then Baratheon.
Jokes on her. One of his aunts, his little kids down the line is going to have a beautiful voice and every lady would be so happy to love him, including this little lady right here pointing at me.
Pointing at Steve.
I love Beric Dondarrion. He's
the coolest.
And so, you know, she shits on him. Everybody laughs. He walks away. Baratheon chides her, says that was not so kind, Your Grace, or whatever. And then he gets parched in the middle of his speech, too. He's so old. He has to go drink some wine. I love that little touch.
Made a meal out of that.
His whole presentation is grounded to a screeching halt so he can get himself some wine.
Excuse me, Your Grace. I'm a little parched. And then, you know, there's some cool things mentioned in there for the Uber nerds, which I presume all of us are if you're listening to a podcast like this. But like he's just talking about Dorne. He mentions the Dornish marches, which is like the area of Dorne, like between Storm's End and like Sunspear. And it's just really cool. A lot of little touches like that. He does mention Queen Alysanne as well, which I mentioned, which is cool. And then we get the little Blackwoods boy. He's like the future lord of the Black, or maybe young lord, current young lord of the Blackwoods. But he's like 13, maybe.
Yeah.
Little BMF, man. He's a bad motherfucker.
In this world, he's probably 10, because if that kid was the same age as Rhaenyra was in episode one of Game of Thrones, there's some things happening. That boy needs to sprout.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so he's maybe like 10. He's like a
he's really little.
Like a Lyanna, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lyanna Mormont. So anyway,
he answered the call.
He proposes next, and she goes from an old man to a young boy, and now she's super pissed. And there's I think it was a Lannister. I thought I saw a lion on his tunic, but I could be wrong.
It looked like it, but I couldn't tell.
But I'd be surprised if they let a Lannister die that way without a whole bunch of tumult.
I thought he was wearing like a black and yellow tunic, which I don't know. Which would be
Baratheon, right? Aren't they black and yellow?
They are, but I mean, it could be a lesser house.
He's definitely
as well.
Not a stag.
Yeah, it wasn't a stag for sure. But I mean, so I don't know. I don't know what it is.
He's an asshole is what he is. So he's back there. Heckling the entire process.
He gave me a good laugh.
And, you know, the young boy's like, I'm going to.
She's got dragons, you dumb cunt. Yeah.
He offered to protect her, even though he was so young. And that was the guy's response. Everybody laughs, including Rhaenyra, which is what I thought was a little out of character for her.
She was like, I could grow to like this guy.
Yeah.
Talking about the heckler.
And then the young lord, the young Blackwood lord, draws his sword. And at that point, Rhaenyra stands up, looks at her Kingsguard.
Well, he calls him a coward.
That's right.
The heckler.
And then she says, we're leaving. And they start sword fighting in the background as she's leaving. And then off camera, fucking stabs him. Like the young boy kills the Lannister, or whoever that is.
The adult
presumably.
Man.
Yeah.
Brutally kills him. It was awesome.
Yeah. Really cool.
He falls to the ground. He's like spits up more blood. And there's people like rushing to him like, oh, no, my lord, he lost a fight with a child.
That's really embarrassing.
I mean, I can't make fun of this guy because I would definitely be that guy if I lived in Game of Thrones. I would be beat by a child mercilessly.
The dumb cunt stabbed him.
Yeah. And I would be yelling that at children constantly, too.
Oh, you dumb cunt.
Yeah. We're allowed to say that because it's, you know, historically accurate.
Yes.
That's an inside joke. Everybody keeps defending the show saying it's historically accurate. Then someone else inevitably calls it the obvious. Like, it's got dragons. What the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. You know what I mean? And then after the scene, it cuts to them on a boat heading back to King's Landing. And then the boat gets knocked by Caraxes.
The big red noodly boy.
Big red noodly boy.
I love him.
Unaware that Rhaenyra's on that boat, I'm guessing.
He was just coming to say hi. Yeah.
Hello.
Little wacky wave bowl inflatable arm flailing dragon.
Just hi.
Hi.
I love this scene. There's so much like a visual detail throughout this episode. And like Rhaenyra gets knocked into, I don't know if that was starboard or aft.
I believe that was port.
Was it port?
Yeah.
Was it port and aft, starboard? And I don't know. Fucking what? She hits the side of the boat.
I think starboard is right and port is left.
Okay. And then fore and aft is the front and back. Mm-hmm. Boaters, write in streamingthingspod@gmail.com.
Boaters.
She hits her head. People who ride boats.
Okay, gotcha.
Schooners. So she hits her head. She's obviously in a lot of pain. She's confused. A fucking dragon just hit her boat, but she realizes that it's Caraxes, and you see that little smirk because Daemon's returning. Right. And it's just a small touch, but but that's huge. Even in that moment with her anxiety and fear and pain, and she's still able to experience that. There's gotta be some deep love there. It's gotta be some deep affection at least. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I love the idea of Daemon on Caraxes. Like, I bet that's Rhaenyra's boat. Ha, 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 ha. This will be fun.
You're right. He's totally the type of person that would know for a fact that she's on there and be like, ha, ha,
fuck
don't fall over. Hope you don't die. And then we cut to Viserys holding court expectantly for the return of Daemon, his brother, who's been gone for years. And we should say another year has passed since episode 3. So 3 years have passed since he sent Daemon away. And Viserys is holding court. Everybody's whispering, and it's Daemon. It's fucking Daemon. Oh my God. He cut his hair. Holy shit.
He showed up with a haircut and a crown.
I hate the haircut. No, I kind of like it. Like, you can hear him whispering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know how people talk.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like when Steve shaved his beard. That's how people were.
Yeah.
Here comes Steve.
He should grow a beard back.
God damn it.
Daemon arrives and Rhaenyra rushes to see him as well. He's got his hair cut, as y'all said. He's wearing a driftwood crown. He's been crowned King of the Narrow Sea, the titular King of the Narrow Sea, for his victory on the Stepstones against the Triarchy Corsairs. Mm. Fucking love this shit, dude.
Triarchy Corsairs.
That's what he said, my guy. And he walks up holding, the weapon of the crab feeder, I presume?
Yeah, I think that's the hammer he was using to nail people to the mm-hmm. post.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And yeah. So Graham McTavish is alarmed as Lord of the Kingsguard, right? He draws his sword and he points it.
Have at you, sir.
Have at you. Mm-hmm. Have at you, Longshanks. And Daemon very arrogantly pushes his chest up against the point of the sword with armor, though. Let's be clear.
And I love how he throws the hammer. He's like, add it to the chair.
Add it to the chair.
So that's such a dope line because there's a lot of tension in that moment because he's got the crown. No one knows what he's doing there. And then when he goes, add it to the chair, it's like, oh, no, he's still on our side.
What if there's an awkward hammer sticking out of one of the arms of the chair in the next episode?
And Viserys cuts his hand on it and he's like, damn it, 4 more fingers.
Even the blunt hammer cuts me on this donda chair.
Edit that into the seasons of Game of Thrones, like the little hammer sticking out the side in the back.
Yeah. So then everybody's kind of alarmed that he styled himself King of the Narrow Sea. But then he says, my loyalty and crown are your and the Stepstones are yours, Your Grace. He bows before the king. He bends the knee. And there's a really interesting detail in this scene that I loved because Viserys is ailing, right? In the books, after the throne cuts him, he never sits on it again, which is like hugely ominous to the people. I haven't seen Viserys sit on it for sure yet. Since the cutting of the first episode either. But anyhoozle, he's definitely...
That's a good point. He sat on his dragon wood chair during the hunt, but yeah. I can't recall him sitting on the throne.
Yeah. So he's kind of scared of it now and he's ill fit to sit it. But in this episode, each episode, he's more and more decrepit, more and more ailing. He's missing the fingers in the last episode, but he's using fucking Blackfyre, the ancestral sword of Aegon the Conqueror. It's like the symbol of the power of the Targaryens, and they made him use it for a cane, mm-hmm. essentially. And that's 100% a detail that they did on purpose. It's like he's leaning everything he can on this reputation, but he's also simultaneously ruining it, right? And I just thought that was a fucking great, especially approaching the strength and the cocksure Daemon Targaryen, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a knowing look to Otto. Like there's a part where Daemon Targaryen I took note of where he's like, yeah, fuck, killed 2,000 people, no big deal. And then he looks at Otto like, bitch. Bitch.
All on my own. I didn't need no help.
Definitely didn't.
And then they hug.
Yeah, then he embraces him. And there's all this tension. You can tell that all of the small folk and lords and ladies that are watching are like, we don't know what's going to happen. We're terrified. We're kind of rooting for Daemon. I don't know how I feel about this.
I don't know about that haircut, but still, he's pretty cool.
I like it, actually. I'm not sure. It's really got to be. That's got to be very forward thinking, that haircut.
It's growing on me.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he went straight 90210.
They're like, oh man, these 1680s are going crazy. Woo! Everyone's doing all sorts of weird fashion.
He's got bell bottoms
in the 1680s. Yes. Yes, nerds. I know it's not that year.
Yeah, nerds. It's actually the 300s.
Yeah.
AC.
Is it the 300s? Or is it like the 150s or something?
Oh, you're right. That's my
Yeah, nerd.
Yeah.
That's my
big. Yeah, you fucking nerd. No, I'm going to call you out now.
I think it's like the late 170s. I'm going to say that right in. So Viserys embraces Daemon and the tension is broken. And we cut to a little garden party. A little Andy. I don't know if there was any conniving in this garden.
There was a garden.
But there was a garden.
There was a garden.
Andy loves conniving gardens.
That's a garden where they connive.
Well, you can never connive in a garden that is so close to what can only be some amazing tapestries. Did you guys hear about the tapestries that we got?
All the way from Kahar and Norvos.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. These tapestries, they are
the
woven.
Thread count.
Damn.
Allison is just... I don't know what the word is. She's befuddled by them.
She's like, when it was delivered here, I needed to sit on my fainting couch for at least a fortnight.
A fortnight. You play that game? You got games on your phone? Did you see that meme? It was terrible. You sent it to me, didn't you?
Which one?
Of Lena Valerion holding.
Yes, you said
going
that
up to Viserys and saying, I need games on your phone.
And it look and he's looking at her
no. All right. Anyway, the garden party. I love this scene as well. Like Viserys is a little tipsy. He's so you can tell he means well.
He's so relieved his brother.
He fucking wants to love his brother. He likes hanging out with him. He's reminiscing about mom. Like I was never the warrior you are. Huh?
You were mom's favorite. I will not debate it anymore.
Oh, Big Dick Damon. You know what I'm saying?
I see it.
BDD.
Even mom said it.
Oh, Targaryens.
Right.
And, you know, he's just having a great time. But
Damon seems visibly changed by his adventures.
He's matured, as Rhaenyra points out shortly.
Haunted, one would say.
But Allison and Rhaenyra, there's that like thick awkwardness. Allison offers to take Damon to look at the tapestries.
They're dope. You got to see them.
And then Viserys shits on her immediately. Like, he hates tapestries. Damon, tapestries.
You dumbass. He has no interest in that. Like, he went hard on that.
He's like turned into a different person because he's cool with his brother again. Yeah. Right. And she's like, oh, my God. And then Rhaenyra, to both of our shock, at least probably Andy, but he was quieter about it. But I heard Steve audibly went, because Rhaenyra came to Allison's defense and tried to save her embarrassment. And said, I would like to see the tapestries. That's the first olive branch that she's extended in 4 years now.
But the reason I reacted was she came up and said, like, I would like to see the tapestries alone. And I was like, fuck, girl. I thought you were given that olive branch. And then she snatched it away.
She snatched it away. But then she didn't know. She like threw a crumb. She went and sat on. She didn't even go to the tapestries. She sat on the fainting couch in the garden as if to say, come here, Allison.
I didn't read that as pulling back the olive branch at all. Like she said, I'd like to see the tapestries. And then the king was like, well, you know, don't withhold yourself.
Yeah, I heard she got like, offended and Allison didn't take the branch quick enough. So she was like, alone then. That's how I read it as well.
It was sad.
But then Allison catches herself and she goes to talk to Rhaenyra on the couch. And that's just really neat, I thought.
Yeah, there was a really good line
they
talk about how her tour, what did you call it, Chris? The tour of
suitors.
Suitors. Yeah, how it did not go well.
Fuckboy Island, I believe they call that.
Yeah, all of them are voted off.
That's actually a show on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Give us money, HBO. We're plugging Fuckboy Island up on here. But no, she talks about how the tour didn't go well. She equates being
and
a
she tells her that
lady
the king
in court.
This is where we learn that the king is wroth with her as well for this.
He's wroth. Mm-hmm. He's so wroth.
I'm so into this lingo right now. I'm in the mode.
She has this really great line where she's comparing, you know, I don't want to be married. I don't want to be sold off as property. I don't want to be imprisoned in a castle. And then there's this beat
and
where she looks
out heirs.
And squeeze out heirs. Yeah. Imprison the castle and squeeze out heirs. And there's this beat where it just kind of looks at Allison and it's like, oh,
because that's how she'd be feeling.
Yeah. That's how Allison feels. And it's
she apologizes to her.
Yeah. And this is a good scene because and this speaks to what this is such a tragic story. But like you want these two women are such great friends and they should be great friends. But this world is just hell bent on keeping them apart and not being happy.
This is one of those huge moments I was alluding to that I just didn't expect at all. I mean, this is
the olive branch.
This whole talk with her, like their reconciliation is huge, right? Because we don't get this at all in the books or anything like the relationship that we've had. And I definitely didn't expect this.
The writers are working really hard to make what's already a tragic story even more tragic.
Absolutely. But also Allison, I think we talked about this on air before. Allison is painted as 100% the villain.
Oh yeah.
In Fire and Blood.
That's what I mean. Like it's tragic what happens to everybody, but like, it's even worse now that they were like friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
Hundo.
Yeah, it's a very good call on their part to kind of rewrite that little part of the book.
Yeah, this was a great scene. And Allison talks about how she's lonely. And we really get to sympathize for Allison Hightower in this scene. And we cut to Rhaenyra talking to Daemon next. And they kind of lingering at the After Garden party. And I love that they, whenever they're being intimate, no pun intended for the later parts of this episode, they always speak in High Valyrian. I just think it's really fucking cool, a really nice touch. And Matt Smith is crushing the, like, he's been on Duolingo learning Valyrian
for
over time.
Steve?
I have been.
How do you say happy birthday?
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet.
Bon anniversaire.
Dour.
So yeah, they talk about...
He really does crush it though. Like both of them like really play the...
Go spaghetti!
I know that it's a... Go spaghetti! I know that it's a fake language, but like it feels real.
Shut your fucking mouth, Andy.
The way that they portray it. You 100%. Know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's wonderful.
She can roll her R's like with the best of them. Amelia Clark was always good at rolling the R when doing the Valyrian speech. And, you know, Emilia Clark is really...
Dracarys.
Yeah. You can tell like the great casting on her part. Cause you can just be like, oh, I can see her being like a distant relative of Daenerys so much.
And there's already the love for Rhaenyra that the world feels for Daenerys as well. Or almost that much, right? Because we saw Daenerys go through some shit. We're a couple Jacaras away from just intense love for Rhaenyra. We need those.
But this was an interesting conversation because, you know, she kind of brings up the point of marriage is dumb. And because Daemon's trying to say, hey, whatever, marriage is a duty, like just do it. And then you can,
wife. I don't care about my wife.
I don't give a shit.
Get
married. You do whatever the fuck you want. You don't have to be, it's not a death sentence. And Rhaenyra's like, for a woman, yeah, it literally is. It can be like my mom literally died giving my dad, trying to give my dad a son.
She's got like a PTSD. She's got trauma from the death of her mother, Queen Emma.
Absolutely.
And they both also make some allusions. She remarks on how much Daemon has changed and matured. And he says the same thing, but his has got like a flirtatious sexual overtone to it. Grown up as well, which is creepy.
Yeah, because he goes on to say that line, like, get used to the attention. You're of age now.
Correct.
which is like, ugh.
We also find out Daemon has no heirs. So his wife in the Vale has borne him no children.
I want to see her so badly. I want to know what I bet she's like hot. And it's just like, he's like, oh, my bronze bitch, because like he was forced to marry her and stuff.
Yeah, he's just a very headstrong, shallow, often terrible person, but he has complicated good sides too. And in fact, in this scene, I think he actually gives her some really good advice in a rare Daemon moment, right? Like you can't, that was a terrible tragedy that happened to your mother, but you can't let that rule the rest of your life. You know, you're going to protect yourself by doing that, but you're also going to, you know, withhold a lot of life's joy. Mm-hmm. And basically he's Mark Twain in this moment, right? Love like you've never been hurt. Dance like nobody's watching. Work like you don't need the money doesn't apply to this particular situation. But
yeah, they're already rich.
That's the full sitch.
And I love how they're kind of setting up their relationship, even though, yes, you know, it's weird. He's her uncle, right?
Can we get past that?
Getting beyond that. Like,
also, we should say we've all read Fire and Blood, and we don't intend to spoil this show for any non-book readers, but be wary. Mm-hmm.
But I love how they've been setting it up. And it, you know, after watching this episode, I've been thinking of like their past interactions in previous episodes. And it's just neat how like when her mom did die, Daemon was the one that was like went forward and comforting her and like pushed her to kind of step up and do what Viserys couldn't do. And then when he took Dragonstone and Otto showed up and there was that great scene, you know, on the, what do you call that? The bridge. And Daemon did that so that he could provoke his brother into doing something to like anger him so much that he'd finally get off the throne and do something. Yeah. But then Otto showed up and there's that look when Rhaenyra showed up and he's contemplating looking at the egg and it tosses it to her. Like, I feel like, now with this further context in that moment, he was just kind of like, well, shit, she's the cool one.
Yeah.
She's like, I respect the hell out of this girl. Absolutely. She's got the stones, the dragon eggs that I've been wanting Viserys to have this whole time. And I just really think they're
balls.
Yes.
I was telling the YouTube, they're usually dumber.
Did you guys get it? But yeah, I just love what they're doing with those characters and building that relationship up.
And it's 100% intentional because in the book, it is Viserys that confronts him at Dragonstone for the egg. So they did that and I think it works. I think it was a good reason, you know, it's a good move. Good move. Anything else on that scene?
I'm good, brother.
In the next scene we cut to brother. Oh yeah. I don't know why I went wrestling on the brain today. We cut to the small council and they're talking about Lord Corlys Velaryon. and how he's still absent. He's still upset about his daughter, Lena Valerian, not being married to King Viserys. And Viserys is like, he's not so pissed about that shit, is he? And everybody's like, yeah.
Surely he's not still wroth.
Pretty sure he is, my lord.
I didn't have any games on my phone.
Yeah. And now there's a rumor, or perhaps confirmed, that Lena is to be betrothed to the Sea Lord of Braavos' son. So he's seeking an alliance with... Steve shook his head disgustedly. That motherfucker.
Sea Lord of Braavos?
Are you kidding me? Sea Lord of Braavos.
That guy.
And so
that's six.
They're worried.
In this world of tens, that's six.
They're worried about the House Valyrian having an alliance with the Free Cities. And so they, broach again. Hey, we need to really get a union with House Valyrian. Or if he does that, we're going to have a union with the Free Cities. And then Rhaenyra is like, oh my God.
Did somebody say union?
Is that Bernie Sanders? You say
it three times in a row, I appear. I know you only said it two, but I got anxious.
How'd you get here so quick? Didn't you take a bus?
Yes. Public transportation is key.
What house would be your favorite, Bernie Sanders?
Oh, let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I really like those...
I don't even fucking know what party we get into.
I like the stocks, the stock kids. I go for the basics.
He definitely would hate House Lannister.
They're too greedy. We need to do something about these millionaires and billionaires on Casterly Rock and Lannisport.
Ow, I have gas from the pizza and the laughters making it. I need milk with a poppy. Oh, God. So then we cut to.
Oh, God. You're going to have a burst belly like Balon did.
I am. I'm in pain. And we cut to Allison. And this is where, I mark every scene change in my notes, just so you all know. But every now and then that makes things more difficult for me, because if they do quick cuts, then I sound like a madman. But I marked every cut. So we're going to do our best to paint a picture for you over the next 12 minutes or so.
Good luck, buddy.
So we cut to Allison holding a crying baby. And again, that tells so much. This is her life now, right? Like, she's getting ridden by this postulated, disgusting king that she has no desire for, right? Mm-hmm. Just doing her duty and bouncing these babes, right? Now, in reality, she would have had a number of wet nurses do most of the raising of the children. But this scene was really good and visually telling she's not happy with her station, right? Or she's dutifully living her entire life, which is sad, right? Mm-hmm. And then we cut to... good night, Sir Criston. And Rhaenyra goes to her bedchamber. She starts to unpack a bag she didn't recognize and smell some clothes that probably aren't hers. She's like, what the hell is this? And we find out that it's Daemon's stinky travel clothes. And there's a message in there. It's like a map to the secret door in her bedroom. What?
She didn't know about
it. Oh, man, that's everything that everyone wants to find out is that their uncle knows about a secret door to their bedroom.
If I had a nickel... I swear, I'd have two nickels, but it's weird that it happened twice. And then she dresses up like Link from the Zelda games, which is, I guess that's what the message said. And then we hear a little Hyrule theme as she goes through the passageway.
Hiya!
Nailed it, Andy.
Yeah, I nailed it. Thank you.
And then Daemon is sneaking her out, and they go down into the craziness of Flea Bottom. And we see, like... I don't know if they're like vagrants, but they're definitely not very clean people, just rutting in the gutter. They are taking one another to Pound Town right in public on Fleet Street.
You thought it was Flea Bottom.
Mm-mm.
It's Bear Bottom.
There's a lot of flea bottoms down
there.
That's
true. I did like the wide shot where you see the, I don't know, is it a street, an alley that they're in that is like so
Diagon Alley.
Diagon Alley that's so congested by people. There's a guy who's like doing a tightrope shtick, but like if you look in the bottom of the frame below the tightrope guy, there's just someone having a random heart attack on the street, and people are like, oh, this guy's dying.
Get him out of the way. He has money. Like, yeah. That's what I took out of that. Like,
I loved it. We never get to see too much of Flea Bottom like this, mm-hmm. right? Like, we've seen
Arya running around kind of being poor.
Arya, yeah, being a poor, running around.
Well, that was her whole
just arc slumming it
during that.
But chasing cats and stuff.
Right.
But also, like, a little bit of... she was.
Like, poor people.
Yeah, it's the only game they got.
That's why I own several cats.
That's right. Thank you, Bernie. Helping out. But also Cersei, like the shame, like we, you know, that's the most we've seen in Flea Bottom. I really, really like this scene. It was so dynamic and it showed the chaos of this, like, you know, this is why the gold cloaks were needed under Daemon's command, right? Stuff like this. This is a crazy little area. But she's having a great time. She's just wandering through with a little smirk and wonder. Like, oh, they're over there snogging.
That dude's got fiery hands.
They're snogging without pants on.
Oh, they got rat meat.
Oh, let me get a bite of this rat meat.
Yeah.
And then we cut back.
If you guys ever find yourself in Flea Bottom, you gotta try the rat meat, okay?
Right.
A secret family recipe.
Die for.
And you want the one on the corner of Flea Bottom and 5th. You don't want the one by Flea Bottom and 6th.
No, he overcharges.
Yeah, that guy is a true dick.
He doesn't use no cream friche.
No. Cream friche?
Cream friche. And then we cut back to, briefly, Alicent cleaning King Viserys's festering wounds that are now going up his arm and his back and so this is a juxtaposition is what it's called, right? Like the free Rhaenyra roaming and smirking and seeing all the craziness. They're banging in the gutters. This is a good time. And then dutiful Queen Alicent just scrubbing the pus off of her late, or not late, but old husband.
Soon to be late.
Yeah, old husbands.
She should have called Maester Marty B. He could have helped her out with all those terrible wounds.
He could. Yeah. What a terrible wound.
What a terrible wound.
Excuse me.
I'm going to give you some milk of the papa. Clear that right out.
Have you been sitting on that one for a minute?
I don't like milk of the papa.
I've said that before on the show.
Really? Have you? Okay.
In the shout outs. And my reaction was the same to you. I was like, milk of the papa. Let me change that. I don't like it. But I'm leaning into it now.
Yeah,
I don't like it either. We cut back to Rhaenyra and Daemon, and they're watching some mummers. Mm-hmm. Mummers being very disrespectful. This is the kind of stuff that Queen Cersei would have killed these people over, right? Mm-hmm. A treasonous production about who's going to rule the throne when Viserys dies. And they're making fun of Rhaenyra a lot. They're also not too kind to the 3-year-old Aegon potential either, nor are they Daemon, but they rag on Rhaenyra the most. They even like made like a rope cock and balls that he pulled out of his breeches at one point. Mm-hmm.
As you do.
As you
supposed to be
do.
Aegon's cock and balls made it weirder.
Yeah. Boo the girl. And this is Daemon teaching her a lesson, right? And she's like, well, fuck him. And he's like, actually, it's very important. If you're going to rule here, you got to know what the people. And I like that about Daemon. Like, he's got a lot of really, 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 really bad qualities. Can't stress that enough. But also, he's very cunning. But at the same time, he realizes he's a man of the people. Like, he's out amongst them, right? Which is why people love him so much. Like, he's at the whorehouse with them. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? A lesser king merely pays for the brothel. Daemon, he's a leader. He doesn't just boss. He's a leader. He's out in front the brothel.
He gets in the brothel, and what's the first thing he does? Takes his hood off because them's the people.
Starts the orgy. Like he's the crazy one. Then everyone else joins in eventually, but he's the trendsetter.
He also stops orgies in their tracks so he can make a speech.
Orgies are called Targaryen Thanksgivings in this world. I told you.
That's a solid joke.
They don't know what that is. And then she takes, I guess that was like the rat meat or some interesting snack morsel. And she's used to being a princess. So she just grabs it. And then another lesson from him. He's like, 4 coppers, street rat. We pay for our pleasures here. And for some reason, she throws it and runs. Money. Or maybe she heard street rat and she went, but it's a fun game to her. But I thought that was awesome that he was like, pay for that shit, yo. Mm-hmm. But she didn't bring any money. She's like, you didn't tell me that in the map.
That wasn't you part said, of the deal.
She said, put beanie on. Mm-hmm. Neff hat, check.
Step one, beanie.
Yeah, Neff hat, check. Shoes with many, many laces.
Step two,
done.
Don't freak out when you read step 4. Step 4, there's a secret door to your bedroom that I know about. Step 5, no, it's not weird. Step 6.
What if she looked at where...
no, it's not weird.
What if she looked at the spot on the map and you just saw his eye like... Hello.
Come on.
How long have you been there? Many
years. Far too long.
Many years. So then on that note, let's cut to our plugs. You can email the show at any time. We have a huge mailbag episode coming in soon because we're about halfway through both Rings of the Power and House of the Dragon. So probably next week.
It'll definitely be next Wednesday because we'll be at the halfway point for both shows.
Yeah. So you heard it from the man, Steve himself. Mm. So email in your thoughts and questions to streamingthingspod@gmail.com regarding Hot D and Rings of Power. Also, you can follow us on Twitter Twitter at Stream Thing Pod. That's at Stream Thing Pod. You can follow me, Chris, at Movies Are Therapy. Steve?
At SteveMay13.
And Andy?
At Andy Most Days.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And you can also go to our Patreon and perhaps support us at patreon.com/streamingthings. We have a plethora of benefits and rewards and tiers by which to support us and get different things for you as well. Like we just did an episode where someone forced us to watch the 1999 movie Mystery Men. Mm-hmm. And that's now a benefit of one of the tiers.
And you can listen to that episode this Wednesday.
That's right.
So just a couple days from now.
We did a couple video shout outs. We recorded some of our favorite character voices from Stranger Things times for them to use as voicemails on their, you know, stuff like that. Like that's what you can get from the Patreon.
Kinds of fun.
Also bonus episodes, things like that. So if you're interested in that, that's great. If you can't do that, totally understandable. Please just consider taking a moment and reviewing and rating the podcast wherever you're listening to this. That helps a ton. There's a lot of Hot D podcasts out there. And anywho, also, we're on YouTube. I don't know if you're watching this on YouTube, that's a weird plug, but we're here. So we cut back, smash. There's this awesome.
Did you miss Sir Harwin?
When she runs away, she runs into Sir Harwin.
Yeah, when she grabs the rat meat,
that didn't happen yet, guys. I'm a fucking master note taker.
All right. Well, I believe
that was what my note said.
Yeah, that's what my note said too. Went straight from that to that.
You guys take inferior notes because it cuts to Alicent very briefly blowing out a candle, and then I actually loved it because she's going to bed, and it smash cuts as soon as she blows the candle out. Back to Rhaenyra running down the alley, and she runs into Sir Harwin, break bones strong.
This fucking guy just gave a shit for not taking a note for cut to candle blowing, cut back to the run.
Listen, you're really making a meal about this, so I'm going to as well. The shit was given not for the candle, but for the lack of faith in your master note taker. Have I not shown you my slashes for scene cuts?
Hey, I'm not saying you're not a master note taker. I'm just saying, what a funny thing to say.
You mock me, sir. You bite your thumb at me. But I actually really, really, I like that scene. I thought it was a really, they didn't have to do that. It was very flourishy, like the smash cut from the candle blow. No,
it's great.
And then she needed
visual storytelling.
Who does she run into, Andy?
Hang on. I crossed out my note. Harwin Strong.
Sir Harwin Strong is who she runs into in the alley. He recognizes her immediately, of course. Well, actually doesn't.
Strong.
He's like, well, what are you running from, boy? And she's like, Sir Harwin.
He's like, oh shit.
Was that a spot on Rhaenyra?
It was.
Sir Harwin.
You had the blood of the dragon in you, Chris.
Oh my God. And he's like, oh my God, Rhaenyra. But then he's kind of cool. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's like a substitute teacher. He's like, oh, you run around the halls, whatever.
Better not catch you next time, boy.
He goes with the
we did kind of skip over. There was one dude that like literally like, get out of my way, boy. And like, he called me a boy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She was so ecstatic to be out of the castle, right?
He called me a boy.
And then at this point, they linger on a shot, a really great shot of Daemon and Rhaenyra holding hands.
Yeah.
And there's like a silhouette as they proceed down the alley after that. They're having a good old time. Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. I'm so excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp because we here on Streaming Things have been big advocates of mental health and therapy for a long time, but we haven't known how to incorporate it into the show because it's something you have to be really responsible about. I'm actually in the mental health field and have been looking for a therapist for quite some time, but have been unable to find one. Every time I find a therapist that I connect with, they're either not accepting new patients or they're scheduling so far out, and my willingness to treat my mental health is so low that I just let it go by and don't think about it again for a while, because that's how my life is structured sometimes. I try to solve my own problems with my own mind, but when your mind is the problem, that's hard to do. So I'm so excited to be working with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is awesome. If you're thinking about giving therapy a try, it works perfectly. It's convenient, it's accessible, it's all online, it's very affordable, and they help pair you with a therapist that can suit your needs after filling out a brief survey, and you can switch therapists at any time. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings. And then we cut back to Alicent, and her maid comes in and says, the king requests your presence. And she's like, the hour's quite late, knowing that it means it's a booty call, right? Mm-hmm. He wants sex. And she's like, I'm not trying to. She's really. Like, yeah, it is late.
I know. And the maid was like,
See, you don't give a man a sponge bath.
Terrible. Terrible.
You were too gentle with that sponge bath, if you know what I'm saying.
The sponge bath is the male version of giving a mouse a cookie, you know, because then he'll want a glass of milk.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Again, we can't stress enough that we wish there was a woman here.
Yes.
And then we so we cut back to a sexy party. Damon has brought his niece to a brothel where there's just people banging all over the place. Right. And she's just looking around like, oh, this isn't the castle.
No.
This isn't the Four Coppers for the rat meat.
Different type of Red Keep.
I don't know what's going on. And we cut, and this is smash cut, not smash cut, but it's intercut with Alicent, and the king's on top of her, and he's just
I feel so bad.
And he's like all these open wounds on his back, and she's just staring at the ceiling. It is terrifying. Not a fan.
Yeah. She just looks like she's in hell, and I'm sure she is.
Yes.
And you know that Viserys is one of those guys that cries afterwards.
It's almost they're setting it up to where she would be so like, she would feel deep in her bones that she put in her time and earned something for her progeny.
You know?
It's almost like she might feel that way later.
Yeah. She's owed something for all the work she put in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, watching that scene, she's not wrong. Point,
and she is not wrong. No.
Jeez.
No.
And then we cut back to Damon takes off her hat. Like, and I'd love, again, I'm sorry, guy. I know I'm gushing over all this shit in this episode, but it's such a small thing, but it's his way of saying, we're not going to hide in here, right? Like, you are Rhaenyra Targaryen. You can do whatever the fuck you want. You're in a whorehouse party. Tell everybody.
You're the dragon. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Because at first it seems dumb and it actually causes a lot of trouble, but in his mind, he's just like, to who? Like, you know what I mean? I'm a god to these people.
I also wonder if maybe it's intentional based on his reaction in later scenes.
Yeah.
Like he wanted to.
Like this was part of a planned thing.
To propose the marriage?
Yep. Yeah. To kind of, because
I don't think any part of him really believed Viserys was going to let him take his daughter as a second wife. But his ego is such that it's possible. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, he takes the hat off. He does not deny what Viserys accuses him of.
For the second time. Says,
marry her to me.
And Missaria pays the boy that tells on him.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So yes, there's the boy that sees them leave. And then that boy goes and tells Otto. And then later on when Damon wakes up with Missaria, when she walks to the room, she pays that boy and
leaves. That's true.
Oh shit.
That's a strange tidbit for sure. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's not so much his plan. Maybe it's more Missaria's being a little,
cause he conniving. Was so drunk, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's weird though.
Because Otto's source is the white worm. And that's what they call Missaria. Because they call her by the white worm at one point.
I wondered who that was. I took a note and put a question mark.
Missaria is the white worm?
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's what they call her.
I don't recall that moniker in the books, but I'm not doubting you here.
It is because I was like, is that Missaria? So I looked it up while we were watching the episode. And yeah, that's what she's known as. Yeah.
The white worm is the source. Dang, Missaria. Mm.
Dang, Missaria. What you doing, girl?
Nickname I remember her having is Lady Misery. But that makes sense now. So he takes off her hat and then Damon kisses her, which is, I did not expect that. Did anyone here expect that?
Well, so before he kisses her, he basically tells her, look, sex is
can be pleasurable.
It's pleasure. It's not just duty, because that was a big part of the conversation that they were having earlier, where essentially Rhaenyra, the entire way that she views sex, sexuality, and relationships is it's duty and it's politics and that's it. And he's like, nah, this is dope. Mm-hmm. Check it out. And then, yeah, he kisses her.
Yeah, look at that guy blowing that guy.
I'm not sure how to feel about it. And the music is making it even more uncomfortable, but she genuinely like seems to have been wanting this for some time.
And it's definitely mutual.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a really uncomfortable sequence because she's kind of talked about how, well, she already had said that it's basically all honor and duty. And now she, I don't know. I guess it's just like the dragon in her coming out or whatever. But everything that she had characterized herself as in the few scenes prior, the way she acts here seems different. It's counterintuitive to what we would believe that she sees all of this as. You know, do you get what I'm saying at all?
No.
No? Okay. Well, she essentially,
like, what is it counterintuitive to?
So she looks at relationships and any of this as being potential death to her, right? Isn't that exactly what she said to Damon? So like her pursuing anything like that seems counterintuitive to what she had just described as her worldview.
Well, she's not pursuing knowingly. She's all id in this scene. He has just walked her through 92 couples and orgies and triples and quadruples, you know, writhing.
And couples coming to you this fall on NBC.
Yeah. I mean, there's BJ's, Cunnilingus, 69 and all kinds of shit. She's like, she's never seen anything like this.
There's
right.
So she's with arms in them.
She's very aroused and intrigued by everything that's going on. And he's also, you know, there's a very dark element as well too, that he's her superior, her better, also her uncle. But you know what I mean? Like there's
giving her alcohol and shit.
Yeah. Like some grooming and stuff.
Grooming involved.
Yeah. But also, you know, like it's, she's all id is what I was trying to say. Like, it's not like a conscious change of philosophy. It's like, she gives into it, right? Like this is,
well, I think it's also like a contrast between she rebels so hard about what you were just talking about, Andy, because it's not her choice. It's you have to do this because of this. And she feels that duty is what is the death of her mom. It's what's going to be the death of her.
I guess that's fair. But
Damon's kind of offering her this, like, no, it doesn't have to be that way. It could be your choice. This could be something that you choose to do, not like duty bound and dictated to.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then like, there's some, he's like teasing her. And I think his intention the entire time was to teach her this. And like, cause he with great restraint, doesn't proceed with, you know, having sex with her, right? Like because he seems kind of angrily, like that was with all of his willpower to not continue.
That's why I was wondering, because we talked about it before, like, that it was part of this plan to get him to, you know, ask Viserys for her hand. And I wonder if like his plan was to actually go through it fully, but like he realizes like, I actually kind of respect her more than that, or like he kind of feels guilty.
I read it Steve's way too. In that circumstance, I didn't think that it was like, fuck, I really want to do this. And then leaves. It was like, I do really want to do this, but it's because of her, not because of what my plan is, you know?
Sure. That's one way you could read it.
Yeah. How did you read it?
I wasn't sure. Like, I felt like he wanted her to, like, he didn't know about Kristen, obviously, but he wanted to. This is so uncomfortable to talk about, right? But flare her up, get her going, and leave her that way and let her find someone else was his intention, right? Like, he knew that was going to happen. He knew she was going to finish it, and he wants her to be a fucking dragon and do whatever she wants. And yes, he does want to marry her because he wants the throne and stuff, but there's more to it than that. Like, I think he does have a genuine love for her.
Yeah.
And I think he does have a genuine respect for her and thinks they would make a great power couple, you know, dragon power couple.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of complex stuff going on here. Like, it's
very complex.
When he's backing up and she's, you know, trying to kiss him more and he's teasing her or whatever's going on there, you can kind of read that as, and this is, again, I don't want to attribute anything like benevolent to this whole fucking situation. It's awkward, but he's letting her kind of make the choice. Like, you know what I mean? Like, do you want to continue? Sure. You know, kind of, I don't know. It could be read that way. I don't know. So we cut to Rhaenyra leaving because she's kind of looking for Damon, and we see the young boy follow her, the spy, that
young boy,
the white worm spy. He follows after, and that's when we know shit's probably going to go down. We cut back to her rushing into her bedroom from the front door. Sir Kristen Cole, very confused. But you already went to bed. Now you're out here. Are you a magician?
Oh my God.
Should I call the maester? Because you know magic. You should show him.
That's a pretty cool trick.
And she's like, oh my God, he's from New Zealand. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
And then, and she's like, no. And she steals his helmet playfully because she's a little drunk. Now she's all, you know, drunk and riled up. She's running around the room. I got your helmet. And he's like, give it back, please.
Please. I need that.
Protects my head.
And then she kisses him and, you know, they play some back and forth a little bit. And then she removes his greaves. And Andy made the joke like, oh God, this is going to take a long time. And they did it. They lingered on it. She removes every piece of his armor on camera, pretty much. Yeah. And I love, again, another detail for Chris to gush about when she removes the white cloak, the symbol of his order and his vows to
honor, to celibacy,
to, you know, chastity, celibacy is a better word. And to, you know, honor the king, that's her father, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. She's very tender with it. And he kind of takes it and lingers on it a long moment. Like he's really making this decision at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. He thought he was never going to get laid again, man.
It's like, maybe. And with a lot of the white cloaks go to the brothels and stuff, right? But the king's daughter, that's a big step.
Yeah.
That's just a way worse.
A leap, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like that they took such care with the white cloak. And then we get a very long, lingering session of them coupling, doing the horizontal hump.
Need I say it, Your Grace?
Coitus.
Coupling.
Need I say it? I feel like Otto throughout this entire podcast.
The
like,
dirty deed.
Are you going to make me say it?
Do I have to say it, Your Grace?
And then Andy's over there like, speak it plainly.
Andy's the Viserys of the pod.
Yeah, for sure. You brought me here at midnight.
And I'm the guy selling rat meat.
Yeah, easily.
Yep. Rat meat here.
And I thought, again, it was just a very respectful, romantic coupling of Sir Kristen Cole and Rhaenyra. Or nah. Was that wrong? Like, she was literally on top. They tried to give her as much autonomy, I feel like, in the scene as...
I think so.
She's a grown woman. You know, she's 18 in this now, right? Based on the time that passed.
They went out of their way to really hammer she's 18 they're doing in this episode.
Going miles to try to make it as least creepy as possible and failing. But like in this scene in particular, and then this was a huge moment because this was the rumor, one of the many rumors in Fire and Blood, like that Sir Kristen Cole was rumored to have slept with Princess Rhaenyra. Right. And that's what Mushroom said. And everybody's like, Mushroom's always talking crazy, lascivious nonsense. And so the show is like, nah,
they did.
They fucked.
Mm-hmm. They did.
So I was shooketh at this development. And then we cut back to Otto. He wants a word or he gets word from the white worm. He's woken up to snitch on Rhaenyra. We cut back to what Steve was talking about earlier. Masaya and Daemon. He's all hungover. She tries to give him some hair of the dog. And he just dumps it out. And apparently she had paid the boy spy. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I didn't catch that either.
And her accent was a little better.
You don't miss a trick, Steve.
Yeah, Steve, don't miss no tricks. Yeah,
her accent did change.
It seemed like a little less like, what the fuck is she doing? You know, there was a hint of it, but I liked it in this scene. What'd you think, Steve?
I didn't notice a difference.
Still hated it, you mean?
No, I don't.
Just ambivalent.
I've never hated it. Yeah, I've been ambivalent towards it. Like, to me, she just sounds like
it's French Jamaican. It's French Jamaican.
A lot of people are like really upset by this accent, but at the same time, I don't really like.
What is the problem, man?
Yeah, I just don't have a problem with his accent. So
that's good, man. That's good.
It's real good.
We cut back to Otto.
Andy, what are you doing over there?
Otto goes in to snitch on Rhaenyra to Viserys. And, you know, Viserys is really not having it. He's like, what of it? You know, I wrote what of it because I thought that was interesting. She was seen outside the keep in a brothel. And he's what of it?
With Daemon, Your Grace.
But he didn't care.
Well, I mean, like. That's what I'm implying.
Steve did the circle and the finger for the audio listeners.
Must you say it, Christopher?
Yes.
Don't. They were coupling.
You went a little Gandalf there for a second.
Fool of a Duke.
Don't tempt me, Frodo. Oh my God. And by the way, that model that he's been working on of old Valyria is huge now.
It's looking great.
He's doing a great job. He's going to have some friends over and have
doing a great job.
Hell of a campaign.
Pretty soon they're going to start painting. Oh man.
That's when the real detail comes. Yeah. What if it's just Warhammer?
His counsel is really just his
you lead. Beggared the kingdom on this new hobby of yours, Your Grace.
But we almost killed the Goblin King. I wrote a whole campaign.
And then anyway, it comes out. He's like with her uncle and he's like, say it. And Alicent is, by the way, spying the whole time.
I love what Viserys says. He's like, are you really that sick with ambition?
Yeah, like, this is when he starts to catch on, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a bridge too far. His precious daughter. And he's having a good fucking night. Like, you know, he feels in his heart like he had consensual sex with his wife. That's not what happened, but he feels like that happened. Mm-hmm. He had a great night. He got a bubble bath. Everything's going well. He's got his brother back.
He's still got 8 fingers. I mean, that's a lot.
Plenty.
Well, that we know of. Maybe he's lost a couple toes.
Yeah. We don't know how many digits he's got on his feet like Steve. Yeah. No one knows.
It's a mystery.
So he's in a great mood. Like, what up, Otto? My dude.
My dude. Early as fuck. That's cool.
You my dog.
So what do you know of Pound Town?
I go there all the time.
Gross.
And so he doesn't believe him at all. And he gets furious with him, tells him to leave. Right. And we cut back to Sir Criston, sheepishly walking into the bedchambers. The queen thinks it's her handmaiden. I'm dressed. Come in under me or whatever. Just brush him. I'm dressed. And then, he's like, hey, the queen wants to see you. And immediately Rhaenyra is a little worried. And she says, you fucked Daemon, right? She speaks it plainly, very quickly. Mm-hmm. She's upset, supposedly on behalf of Rhaenyra. I believe her. Like, she's just like, oh my God, what have you done to yourself? Is kind of her reaction, I think. Mm-hmm. And she denies that she slept with Daemon because she technically did not. And so she's very convincingly like, I swear to my mother. Mm-hmm. But there's a hint. We've finally got this relationship repaired, seemingly. And there's a hint of the first bit of like real vehemence on behalf of Alicent, where she's like, you Targaryens, that's normal for you, right? Like, that's, I don't know. I got the, uh-oh.
There's, mm-hmm. She also slides ever so briefly. She slides into like, your father and I worked very hard on your tour and you just ruined it.
Like, yeah. So now she's like stepmothering all mm-hmm. of a sudden, right?
Like literally there's a point where Rhaenyra would have been okay if she said, okay, mom.
Like, yeah. Okay.
She would have been justified in saying,
yeah, if this was like 400, 500 AC, that would have been what she said.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little too behind
for
the times.
For real. Whatever, mom regent.
And it's at the heart tree, which you say in like the first episode, like, was that a heart tree? And it definitely was.
Weirwood? It is a heart tree for a Weirwood. Yeah. A listener, I think if it was in the Discord or in the email, but I really don't think there's supposed to be a full on God's Wood with a heart tree in King's Landing. I could be wrong. I really fucking need to Google it. It would be a quick Google.
I don't
Google.
Think there is one in Game of Thrones. That's time in the for books. Sure. Yeah.
But someone was like, yeah, there is. Cause you know, da, 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 da. And I don't know. I don't know. I have to check on that. But maybe by the end of the show,
yeah, there is Chris. It's right there. It's in the background of the show.
Oh, hello.
It's been in like 3 episodes.
Hello, tree.
It talks.
Hot tree.
Hi.
And we cut to, you know, she basically tells her version of it. Daemon kind of, you know, pushed her down there and then left her and took off with a whore. And she says that you sullied yourself, right? We're used to the unsullied. And now Rhaenyra is the sullied. So it's just more Game of Thrones illusions.
Go spaghettis.
Cut back to Daemon, mega hungover. Go spaghettis. And he's out of context. That's fucking great. He barges into.
Now I know I have that power over you. I can just say go spaghettis at any point.
Go spaghettis.
You can't say that.
I can't not say it. He barges in. He's like stumbling through. He doesn't have his sword or anything. He's wearing like his shirt's untucked. He's like, man,
dirty
going. Coming back to the keep.
Out.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And he gets hauled before the king by the king's guard. And he just lays there.
Your presence.
You got Graham McTavish coming in hot with that great king. Voice.
The king.
King. My name is Graham.
And you guys said as evidence of his plan earlier that he doesn't deny it, right? But I disagree that that's the smoking gun that you think it is, because he didn't deny saying that shit about the king's dead son in the brothel 4 years ago either, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're all meant to believe that he did say that, but he could have easily been like, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. That'd be terrible, right? Like, that's just not in his nature. If you're going to accuse me of some shit, like, he has this air of like, it doesn't fucking matter to me what you think, king, peasant, anybody. Mm-hmm. So believe what you want to believe, right? Because he knows he did not have sex with Rhaenyra. And it would be such an easy thing to be like, no, I didn't. And I know you think he's starting shit because of that, but I think it's more like, what if I did, bro? Like, you literally couldn't do shit mm-hmm. if I did. What is this? What are you even talking about right now? You know what I mean? I think that's his attitude for everything.
Oh, for sure. He's got a chip on his shoulder.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. But it's just frustrating because he just lays there.
That could, like, go either way. Just based on.
I understand your all's point for sure.
Yeah. Like the heir, the calling the child the heir, that heir for a day or whatever, yeah, it was, like, he got called out on that by like a massive group of witnesses and stuff. And yeah, there was no like real recourse for him to one deny it, or there was no reason for him to actively say, yeah, I did. Whereas this one, I don't know, this one felt conniving. But well,
there's
know,
definitely that's a plan going it. On. There's definitely some sort of plan going on.
Yeah, I totally missed the Masaria paying the spy, yeah, for sure. Which
whether
is,
or not, yeah, Damon's involved with it, or if he's just kind of,
or maybe he's trying to sully her name too.
Yeah,
because he wants to be king.
Mm-hmm. But well, and he uses this opportunity to fight to ask Viserys, like, wed her to me. You know?
Yeah.
Why not?
You already have a wife.
Yeah. Semantics.
One last interesting thing I want to talk about very carefully on this scene is, like, Damon in his own way is being a feminist in this scene, because Viserys says, you know, he said at her age, we were at the whorehouse every day, yeah, just slaying it, you mm-hmm. know? And he's like, yeah, but we're men. And he's like, it doesn't fucking matter. Who cares what she's doing? Like, you should tell everyone who has a problem with what she's doing that they can
fuck off.
They can fuck off somewhere or just mm-hmm. take their head off like this. She's a dragon, mm-hmm. you know?
That too.
So in his own way, I just thought it was interesting. Like, he's actually pretty feminist standpoint there. Like, it's no different than yeah. you and I at that age and at the same
very
brothel.
Sex positive. It's hard to picture the king slaying in the whorehouse, though.
He was tearing it up for money.
I think
they weren't.
Yeah.
When I had these two fingers.
But I mean, Rhaenyra also sort of like Rhaenyra also has the same basic like argument against Viserys in their scene later on, where she's like, what the hell? Like, it's okay if yes. guys go and do this. And that persists to today. Like, today, that's still an issue where people are like, oh my God.
In our universe, it is the same way. Yeah.
A woman had sex before marriage. My God. But the guy, no big deal.
He's killing it.
Dude, my dude. Bones, knuckles, my friend.
Right.
And it's so fucking stupid.
Yes.
It is stupid.
I agree. There's nothing else I can say.
Let people fuck. That is the
if they want to.
Well, I would assume let people consensually fuck.
Yes. Can we be more clear?
I was going to say that is my house. Those are my house words.
That's your house words.
But maybe yes, we should have added let add people consensually fuck. Yes,
that is Steve's house. The house word. The May house words.
If they want to fuck, let them fuck.
The words of House May.
Come on.
Let people consensually fuck. Great house.
What would the sigil be?
It would probably just be, do you guys remember? Yeah. It's Otto Hightower looking very uncomfortable doing the circle
the finger. In the circle.
No, it's just
listeners.
Just the two hands.
Must I say it, Your Grace?
And then we cut back to Alicent and Viserys. And Alicent kind of defends Rhaenyra. Like, she told me she's still has her maidenhead. I believe her, right?
It's not in her nature to be deceitful.
It's not in her nature to be deceitful.
But Damon, though.
Very deceitful.
Deceitful Damon. We call him. Everyone say it.
Double D.
That's him. Yep, double D.
We cut back to Rhaenyra. She enters the king's chambers. She looks at that dope ass Warhammer model and she's like, I really want to play. Mm-hmm. Ooh, there's a dagger in the fire. And
weird place for a dagger.
She's about to weird play. Let me move it. He probably didn't mean to burn his knife. And as soon as she that's not a knife.
Paul Hogan comes out of nowhere.
As soon as she touches it, he's like, secret only fire can tell.
Oh,
that was my joke later.
Oh, damn.
Secret that only fire can tell. But yeah, he jumps out of nowhere and he's like, don't touch my knife. She's like, ah. And then they have a great scene. And I expected him to jump right in and chastise her. But there's a double meaning to that word in this situation.
Yeah, there is.
He jumps into the prophecy. And like all of this bullshit we're dealing with, Rhaenyra, is what he's seemingly saying. It's like it's nothing compared to what our true mission is. Right. And this is like a really interesting tack that this show has taken, is like these Targaryens were destined to save the world from the Night King, right? From the Long Night. And there's a famous inscription on the knife that was Aegon's and Aenar's before him. And whoever, Viserys is not a history buff. He's like, and who knows before that?
Whoever came before that,
it was probably like a bunch of people.
So many. Yeah, read the scripture yourself. It's really quite cool.
It's quite cool. You can't read, can you, Father?
Nay.
Read it to me, please. You read this scene way differently.
I've been waiting my whole adult life to figure out what these scribbles meant.
And it says,
it just says dick butt. Yeah, I was gonna
say, he's like, it's how, it speaks of the prince that was promised. She's like, this is a recipe for goulash.
Goulash. From my blood comes the prince that was promised, and his shall be the song of ice and fire. Mm. Boom. I've heard that before. And then, you know, he says to her that Jaehaerys would have disinherited her. And she said, for what? A lie. And he's like, yeah. I don't care if it's true or not. Perception is all that matters. So he has the opposite viewpoint of Daemon in a way.
He's
right?
Seen Wag the Dog. Mm.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. You're trending on Twitter and it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He's a relativist. And he said, you will wed Ser Laenor. And that's the, we actually saw him in the last episode. If you all recall, he rode Sea Smoke.
Yep.
And he says, there's a point where she's something about political headaches. And he's like, you are my political headache. Right.
Yeah.
Like, which is a really good. I love the dialogue in this episode and the show. And then she says, OK, I'll wed him. But what about the vulture that perches above the Iron Throne? And she's like, what are you talking about? And she's like, Otto, Obvi. And then she says this cold blooded ass line, like, I will do my duty and wed Ser Laenor, but you must do yours as king, implying that you have to get rid of Otto. Mm-hmm. And he realizes that to be true because, like Steve was talking about earlier, he learns or he slowly realizes or is honest to himself about what Otto's designs are and how deep they've run. So then Otto is called to Viserys. They talk about Balon the Brave, Viserys' father, Jaehaerys' son.
Keep up,
baby. He was hand of the king for 5 days and then he died of a burst appendix, I think.
A burst belly.
I think it was appendicitis, man.
A burst belly.
Poor bastard. And then Viserys is kind of like, so anyway, you're not hand anymore. Takes his hand pen.
Unhand me.
That was Steve's joke.
Unhand me, sir.
You've unhanded me.
This was a great scene because you really see him put the pieces together. Like, I thought you were my friend, and he specifically points out like, oh, I know why you took Allison and told her to come into my chambers. I see that now. I was blind then. You took advantage of my grief.
Yeah.
And he was like, I will never get over Emma's death. Like, and he's just really kind of just laying into him. And he's like, you know, You were a great servant. You serve the realm well. You serve two kings now, but I cannot trust your judgment now because you are poisoned by ambition.
Indeed. And Otto looks shooketh.
And it's all fair points, man. All fair points.
Don't make me say it.
Which is interesting because last episode we were really thinking that, you know, Otto was this big manipulator, and he is. But last episode we kind of started getting hints, especially now that we know that one guy is Hobarth Hightower. His brother, like he was manipulating.
Yeah, the Otto. Hightower like, family is has designs.
So maybe it's just this vicious cycle in the Hightowers where Otto is manipulating Allison to get what he wants, and his brother is manipulating him to get what they want. It's just this really gross gaslighting family
trauma.
Yeah,
family trauma. Yeah. It's a thing.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the very end of the episode. The last scene is the Grand Maester bringing a tiny bottle that he has brewed himself on behest of the king. And gives it to Rhaenyra.
We call it Plan T.
And it is indeed going to prevent her from becoming pregnant, from anything she may or may not have done, any unwanted consequences. That'd be $6. I run a gas station down the street.
It is interesting to bring tea in like a crystalline, it looks like something Pope would throw at you to like dispel demons. It looks
like some really rare bourbon.
Oh, yeah. Like a nice little decanter. Is that what you call that?
Some Pappy 23 for you.
A holy water grenade. Yeah.
It did look like that from Castlevania. But yeah, so he's got some plan B for her, and that's the end of the episode. And she is a shocketh, which brings us to our dragon egg segment. Find some lore tidbits and whatnot. Steve, lay it upon me.
Okay. So in the beginning of the episode, we talked about was it the Blackwood kid? Who has a little bit of a fighting spirit in him.
Stabby.
He gets a little stabby. It reminded me of a young little Lyanna Mormont from the original series. Just a kid who people kind of look at and kind of be like, oh, you're just a kid. But really, there's a little more than meets the eye.
And Arya even.
And Arya, of course, yeah.
He was a little more stabby than everybody thought.
Absolutely. Andy, do you have any?
Well, I got big Arya vibes when we saw the Mummers show. We got to see how the folk really felt about Arya's family when she watched the play in the streets. And like the guy that was like playing Eddard was like dumber than Box of Rocks and shit, and got to see like how the common people see the elite.
Yeah.
And so Rhaenyra seeing the same thing happen down in Flea Bottom felt really, really, really reminiscent of that.
Anytime there are any sort of Mummers or stage productions in the Game of Thrones universe, typically my least favorite part of Game of Thrones.
Really?
Yeah, I did not. Like, I know there are big fans of that stage performance in the Arya scene in the original series, but I hated it. I like just did not like that at all. It was just weird. And like, yeah, I know the story. I've watched six seasons of this. Mm-hmm. And then this was also just kind of like, I get it. It does serve a very functional, good storytelling purpose, but it's still kind of like, I don't ever like watching those type of plays in real life. So like watching them here, it's like,
watch a lot of Mummers. Do you, Steve?
So many Mummers. Mm-hmm. You go to a Renfest. Liked them.
2 stars on Yelp.
He's never liked them. And he keeps going back.
Yeah.
He likes the snacks, the rat meat. Mm-hmm.
It's good stuff, man. You put some cream friche on that shit.
Cream friche. When she goes through the passage, I just thought it was cool to talk about for super nerd stuff. So those passages, Andy mentioned, like the one in her bedroom that she doesn't know about, right? Which is creepy, but that's how it was. King Maegor the Cruel had all those passages built. Then he murdered all of the stonemasons and carpenters that built the castle so that no one knew where they were, or they were useless to him if everybody knew about them. Mm-hmm. So there's labyrinthine passages that nobody knows about. And that's the same passage. I don't know whose room that is. I'm sure somebody smarter online is going to figure it out, but it might've been Tyrion's, but I think that's the exact passage that, Varys, the spider, uses. And cause they go down to that room with Valyrian's skull frequently. And she walks through that room. So I just thought that was neat.
Nice. Maybe that's how Varys got Tyrion out of there.
I think so. Tywin. In that little passage where Daemon's waiting, maybe.
It's a good pull, man. Mm-hmm. Good pull.
After he kills the Tywin.
The other ones I have, we kind of briefly talked about. We already talked about Balon's burst belly and the prince that was promised. So that's all I have. The pee that was peed.
Andy, got any else?
I just have Dondarrion with an exclamation point because I love Beric Dondarrion so much.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably like his great-great-great-grandfather that was trying to woo Rhaenyra, and that was fun. And then I had the Kingsguard cloak because I noticed the same like reverence that they bestowed on that cloak when they were disrobing. But we already talked about that. That was it for me.
I just want to touch on a couple of quick things. Like Andy was saying, like House Blackhaven, the Lord of Blackhaven is the first guy that spoke at the beginning. He's a Lord Dondarrion. But also it's worth mentioning, I believe that Lord's steward is the father of Criston Cole. They said that's where he was from. Like he's just the steward of Blackhaven's son. And they are near Dorne, which is why he has that Dornish ancestry a little bit. We also mentioned the tapestries. Those came from Cahor and Norvos.
Oh, those tapestries, you guys.
Beautiful tapestries from gorgeous. Cahor and Norvos. Those are gorgeous. Two the cities.
Colors, there's like three colors.
Yeah. There's so many colors in Cahor, for sure. Those are two cities in Essos. They're near Volantis and Pentos, if I'm not mistaken. Out that way where Daenerys gets running around out there. So just thought it was neat to mention.
She picked up some tapestries while she was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, cheap though.
They said the word pyromancer. Viserys did at one point. And we of course know about those from their duds nowadays or in, King Joffrey's day, Queen Cersei's day.
Dragonfire.
Yeah. Wildfire.
Wildfire. Yeah.
But they used to be bad motherfuckers back in Valyria.
Yeah.
The pyromancers. Which brings us to our top three favorite moments of the episode, the Valyrian Steel segment. Steve, what's your number three favorite momento?
My number three favorite moment is when that mysterious lord called that kid a dumb cunt. And the subsequent
stabbiness.
The stabbiness of it. I just really, that was some fun little levity that you don't really see a lot in Game of Thrones. And it's just kind of fun to see jerks get their comeuppance, especially in Game of Thrones, because it happens so rarely.
Cuntuppets, if you will.
Yes. Yeah. Cuntuppets. So RIP that guy. See you next Tuesday.
Yeah. Can we just say see you next Tuesday from now on?
No.
I feel like we're...
I will not be censored.
You tell him, see you next Tuesday. Takes some of the sting out of it, doesn't it? It does.
Oh, yeah.
Andy, what's your number three moment?
Also my number three. Just little dude's a badass. And that was very Game of Thrones for that to happen in the background. And for it to be as violent as it was.
At the opening.
Yeah, it was dope.
My number three is when Damon throws the hammer after everybody's worried he's going to try to fight with it and pull his sword Dark Sister and kill the Kingsguard, and just says, add it to the chair. Just that whole scene, him walking up and into the point of the sword. The man gives no fucks, and I fall for that every time. You know what I'm saying?
Love that, dude.
Steve, what's your number two?
My number two is when Viserys unhands Serato. It was just good to see that Viserys kind of like figure out what's going on. He's no bozo. He's like this well-intentioned guy who is just not well-intended for the king, the role of king, you know?
Yeah.
And, it's good to see him get a couple wins every now and then, even though like, you know, there's a gross scene with him in this episode, but
super gross.
Yeah. But, and it's also good that, Otto gets a little bit of his comeuppance too. And I'm excited to see what they do with that character now that
things are
like,
boiling up, man.
Yeah. Now that he's not whispering in the king's ear from now on, what's he going to do? What's like, going
to
happen?
Not to be dramatic, but we have 6 episodes left. And things are boiling up. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to slow down with the time jumps now, I would imagine. Or we might get too far along. I'm not sure. It'll be fun
to see. We're going to have another huge time jump, though, right? In order to get the rest of the cast?
Yeah. Yes.
So.
I don't think this was the last episode with Millie.
That'd be crazy.
I think it's next one, though. Like, maybe in the middle they'll switch. We'll see. Shit. Andy, yeah. What's your number two?
So my number two is also Damon coming in and giving up his crown and the hammer. And it was just, there was so much, like, discomfort. But, like, there was a lot of tension in the air. And I desperately, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen, I desperately wanted to see him throw the hammer and then go hard with it. But I thought that the acting, the performances were great. The relief was palpable. I loved the guy that is, what's that guy's name that plays the king?
Paddy Considine.
I think that he is absolutely fucking crushing it. Like
he is
like kind of the MVP of the show so far.
It's come a long way since Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. One of the Andes. That sequence was fantastic.
Absolutely. My number two is the stabby cunt boy. I love that opening. Like you guys said, it just encapsulates everything we love about this franchise. And, but I just honestly got so happy. Just like, it's so fun. I know it was terrible.
When it cuts to the kid stabbing that guy, there's just this like, yeah, get a kid.
Like the fact
knock
that
him down.
Like, we did not expect there to be bloodshed. Like we thought the scene was about to cut. Because Rhaenyra's back is already turned. It's a great spot to cut. And then we hear that, and then she turns around and the camera follows her eye line of sight. I just had a great chuckle out of that. Great chuckle. Steve, what's your favorite moment of episode 4?
My favorite moment was when Damon and Rhaenyra were talking in the gardens. Nice, quiet moment. I love, like you mentioned earlier,
Valyrian, yeah.
They're talking in Valyrian almost the entire time. It's like a 2 minute to 3 minute long straight of just Valyrian talk. And it was really, really cool. And both actors are crushing it on the show. And it was just great to have like a scene with them, just them acting. And, you know, Damon's a little different and she's a little different. And, you know, they're kind of maneuvering around each other in that way. And, you know, it's not quite garden conniving, Andy, but it's a good example of the great, great Game of Thrones dialogue scenes.
Garden's position.
Yeah.
Andy, what was your favorite?
So my number one is Damon and Rhaenyra walking around Flea Bottom and like getting to see all the fun stuff happening. The people banging, the drunk dude, the dude walking the tightrope. She looked like she's just having so much fun. And when she like runs and gets grabbed by Sir Harwin, she's like, oh my God, he called me a boy. And like when she grabs the food and throws it at the guy and runs and stuff, like it was just fun to get to see that aspect of the world. But to get to see this character who, you know, has been stuck in these stuffy, awful places her entire life, to get to go run around for a minute and have fun. And then it leads into like the orgy and stuff that gets uncomfortable. But I'm leaning more towards the levity aspect that happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's all a great sequence. I agree with you. That's sort of my number one as well. It's going to seem weird, but my specific number one is Rhaenyra and Sir Criston Cole, that scene in her bedchambers. Specifically, I think it is a monumental event as a fan of Fire and Blood. But also I thought it was handled with such care in the details, like when he sets aside the white cloak and looks at it for a long time. And it is a pit, like you guys said, like not a whole lot happens in this episode, but I would argue the most that has happened in any of the episodes so far, because we also, the fact that it was juxtaposed with the misery of Alicent's existence and her marriage to Viserys, is what I love so much about it, because those two young friends came back together so briefly. And I feel like it was like an hourglass shape, like they separated over the marriage and they met like, oh, we're friends again. And they immediately separated as and ne'er to meet again. Right. Is what I feel like happened, because they both made decisions and took. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Like they both, this is where they pivoted in life. Like Rhaenyra just took a hard pivot down a direction in life in this episode. And I thought that they gave that decision the care that it required. Mm-hmm. I thought it was huge, which brings us to the final segment, the Mummer's Dragon, our favorite performance of the episode. Steve, who are you going to give it to? And why is it Patty Considine?
It's not Patty Considine.
It's not. No. I always try to guess Steve.
I mean, I he's always on the short list, if we're being honest, because he's amazing. No, it's Millie. Millie, this is her episode, right? This is the first episode of the series, I think, that is like hers to command, right? And she really rises up to the challenge and crushes it. I mean, from the utter frustration you see in her face when she's kind of like arguing with her father about how unfair the world is for women. And then, you know, when she's sitting on the fainting couch with Allison at the beginning, and you kind of see the tender first steps into potentially, hopefully rebuilding that relationship. And then also the mirth and joy of her going through Flea Bottom and having so much fun there. And then
so much mirth,
the turn of
no wrath, all mirth.
And then the uncomfortable turn of like her kind of discovering her sexuality in a way, and like how that it is kind of an uncomfortable scene to watch because of the context of those two's relationship. But like, you know, she really kind of expressed all the different complicated emotions that someone going through that would experience. And it was just so awesome to see her really kind of grab this episode by the horns and really go at it. And she crushed it. So I'm so happy for her.
Absolutely. Andy.
Also, Millie's horn grabbing.
Mm-hmm.
She crushed it.
Millie Alcock is my choice as well. And I don't know why I thought that was like a hot take. I just, well, you explained it to you. It's definitely not.
It was absolutely her. So many of the threads that have been established for her character coming to some sort of not conclusion, but some sort of like next chapter.
Yes.
Not just with her
change of direction
with her friend, but with also with her dad, with herself, with the people that are protecting her. Like in a lot of ways, this was like the next step for this character. And Millie was up to the task. She crushed it.
Absolutely agree. I think she's the MVP of the episode. I love this episode. Cannot wait for episode 5. I hope you all are enjoying it as well. Thank you for tuning in along with us. Again, this episode is also on YouTube if you're ever curious to watch us do the thing and hang out with us very soon.
You'll have one more episode of our regular coverage. So next Monday will be the next Hot D episode, but then the Wednesday after that will be our mailbag episode. Yes. So be sure to write in. We will be recording that mailbag episode Sunday. So
if you have a different take on something or just a different anything, you know, questions, concerns, or, you know, just your own thoughts on anything that we've talked about, please write them in and we'll read them out on the show and make a meal of it.
Write them in by let's say end of day Saturday. So if you get that in, you have a chance that your email will appear on our mailbag.
That would be the 17th?
Yes.
Here's the mail.
Indeed, indeed. All right, that's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming. Patron shout out. Thank you for your patronage.
You have a beautiful voice.
I don't think I do.
Aw.
Pretty good.
Don't be so hard on yourself, buddy.
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10. Would smash. Well, we're doing patron shout outs differently this time, guys. We're going to do them once a month, and this recording will last the entire month. But in this month, we will go over the new patrons that sign up for the month and also the patrons who upgraded their tiers that month as well. Mm. Are you excited to find out the cool people that did such a thing?
I'm very excited.
All right. So let me introduce to you our brand new patrons for the Try Before You Deny tier. It's Aaron Layton and Crystal Trujillo.
Woo! Hi, friends.
In the Marty P VIP tier, it's Josh and Anna.
Marty B.
What did I say?
Marty P.
Oh, Marty B. Excuse me.
How fucking dare you? I've been here for how long and you miss me? You don't know my name.
The entire time, sir.
You've given me a terrible wound.
What if Marty B's like a Marty P, man?
Well, our new chocolate pudding producers, we have Alex Fisher, Brittany Deck, Enver Psycho. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm surely not.
Probably not, man.
Jen L, Jess R, Mandy Spears, Shannon Myers, and Zach Suthers. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, friend.
Thanks, Pachachos.
And our final new patron in the Friends Don't Lie tier, we have Colin P. Frost. Thank you, Colleen.
Another P, man.
Thank you so much. Now we go into the upgrades.
That's the road less traveled, man.
These are the people that gave us money before, and we thought, hey, what about more money for these guys? Because they're just so giving and full of mirth.
Mirth,
all of it. These people upgraded to the Try Before You Deny tier.
Try Before You Deny, man.
Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Casey McCain, John Collins, Kalisha Reeves, Kate Kiki, and Will Nash. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
And then these people upgraded to the Marty B VIP section. Thank you, A. Wells, Adam Horn, Adam Raymond, RK Chenanigans, Barb, Caleb Jeter, Carmelita Valdez McCoy. I love saying your name fully, Carmelita, because it's so cool. Chloe Richardson, Cindy Miller Ray, Elizabeth Hubbard, Enza, Jimmy Gadd, John Madden, like the John Madden. Isn't he dead?
Yes.
Well,
they thought dead,
but he's on the cover of Madden 23.
And now he's here to write X's and circles over footage of football players. Thank you, Jadinglage. Thank you,
Jadinglage
Morgus. Thank you, Katie Blair, Kayla Hickens.
It's just me.
It's me.
The French Oak.
Thank you, Lisa L., Marcus Mills, Michelle Moore, Nick Nolte, Nicole Cassis, Paola Garcia, Sean Callahan, Stephanie Pagalis, Suzanne Rode, and Sydney Day. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Merci beaucoup.
And good night.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.